Afternoon, everybody. I'm David Hartman. It's nice to be with you today. And thank you. Thank you. And please welcome Jim Tobel, who owns this airplane.
Thank you.
Jim, when we just wound up the video talking about four Medal of Honor recipients from World War II. With your experience and your entire lifetime with this airplane, when you see and think about them, what goes through your mind and through your heart when you see them and think about what they did?
You know, just the valor, valor alone. I mean, these are young guys thrown into combat, flying a fighter, and you're out, it's kill or be killed. And you're out there doing the best you possibly can, and you have all these elements that are against you, and then you have a machine like this that makes you into a positive impact. Because it's the tool. It is truly a tool.
So this airplane, or different designs of the airplane, had a multi-year life. Going back to that period at the tail end of World War II, what was that airplane capable of doing, and then how did it progress out of that before we got to Korea?
Well, this aircraft obviously served in the Pacific Theater. And you go backwards, and you had the Wildcat, which, you know, was great in its time, but it was a little lesser of an aircraft than our adversaries. So then the Hellcat came out, and so on and so forth. Each one, the Japanese had a little bit better aircraft. So the Corsair was designed based upon all this knowledge that we learned, that we had to design something to attack the Zero. So this aircraft used the largest engine and propeller combination at the time, and Chance Vought built the airframe around the power plant and propeller.
So then moving on to Korea, so what happened in the design of the airplane when you got to Korea?
Well, they
it's
learned.
It's now like five, six years later.
Yes, they learned a lot from the Dash 1 variations. Goodyear, they couldn't produce them enough, so they subcontracted to Goodyear. Goodyear and Chance Vought were supplying aircraft concurrently. So they learned a lot of enhancements, such as adding the fourth blade. Instead of having a three blade, they put floors inside the aircraft. The wings were now armament where they could put 8 5-inch HVR rockets. And the Dash 4 was a learning curve from all the other predecessors as to a more enhanced, higher altitude aircraft.
We just heard those names, Pappy Boyington. Did you ever meet Pappy Boyington?
You know, that's so ironic. I'm old. And so back in the early 80s, I would come out here and buy parts at Ban Air. They had their little shop, and having a T6, you need seal kits or whatever. So I would buy my parts, and there's Pappy Boyington with his wife selling the book. And I'd go over and talk with him, speak with him, not knowing one day I would actually be flying a Corsair.
What about Tom Hudner?
Tom Hudner, I was very blessed to have the opportunity. We presented to a young recipient a scholarship, and Tom asked that I join him in this presentation over at the Eagle Hangar. And what an amazing individual Tom Hudner was.
So, and explain what happened to him in Korea, just so we get an idea.
Well, they were flying in Korea in Corsairs, and his wingman, one of the pilots, Jesse Brown, I believe his name was, right. He was the first black fighter pilot that I believe that we had in that Corsair era, and he had engine trouble, and he landed the aircraft behind enemy lines.
It's up in North Korea.
Yes, in North Korea during the Korea War. And then Tom would circle. And willing to sacrifice his aircraft to help his wingman that was, he didn't know if he was alive or, you know, what the situation was. And so he ended up doing the best he could under the circumstances with his airplane.
And your lifetime is tied up with this airplane. When did you start flying?
Wow. I started flying when I was 9 years old. Dad had a Stenson 108.
Nine
years old, and I would sit there, and he taught me how to fly. And that's a big rudder, you know. That was a little bit of a challenge. But I didn't have a phone book. I actually was able to sit on a pillow. But and so from that that point forward, my father was a pilot.
Tell me about your dad.
Well, my dad served in the Marine Corps, and I was born at Cherry Point. And he was in VMF 231, which is now VMA 231. And I was slated to fly Harriers in his former squadron. And the Hawaiian life came, and ailing family business, Marine Corps, and so I knew where I had to go. And so I did not go down that path, but aviation has always been in my blood. And so my dad and I worked together as well with the business. And so we started to work on warbirds. So our first one was an SNJ. We bought it. We restored it. We flew it. And then we had...
Did you actually physically do the restorations?
Physically, yes. My dad and I both did all the work. We restored them, flew them, repaired them, and paid the bills, swept the floor, and kept them clean.
And where did this airplane come from? Where'd you get this airplane?
Well, we looked at five different projects, and so we selected this particular model after looking at, I think, about four or five. We bought it in 1981 in three truckloads of parts. And it took us 10 years to build it, got it flying in 1991, and in 1992 was the first air show, and that was in Titusville, Florida in 1992.
And how did that go?
Oh, elated. My father was just elated. I mean, you spend 10 years of your life building something that you'd work weeks and weeks and weeks, and you wonder, what progress did we make? Because you just keep working, and then finally, it all comes together.
How much of that is passion and how much of it is obsession?
In our case, 98% was passion. 2% was obsession.
So he started flying it.
Yes.
Did you start flying it then too?
I did a few years later. Dad didn't want to work out all the bings and the bangs and, you know, get the airplane kind of dialed in, so to speak. So a couple years later, then I jumped into it. I think it was about 93, 94,
right.
And then I started to fly the aircraft.
So what happened with him flying the airplane?
You mean initially?
Yeah, no, later.
Oh, in 2002,
yeah.
My father, we were at an air show, the last air show of the season, which is in Columbia, South Carolina. And he developed engine trouble in the aircraft and was trying to get back to the... Well, let me back it up. The reason why we were there is my dad always went over to the VA, and he noticed that the VA patients couldn't make it to the airport for the air show. So he would call them up and say, hey, wheel all the guys out in the front yard. I'm going to bring the Corsair over and give them their own little air show. So he started going, and I would go, and other pilots are going, hey, where are you going? My dad said, well, we're going over the VA and give them a little air show themselves. They said, well, we want to go with you. So it turned out that we had more. Each year was more and more aircraft. Well, we had a B-25, we had T-6s, Corsairs, Mustangs, all heading over to the VA. And so we were rendezvousing. We were all getting together. And that's when my dad had engine trouble. So he was low and slow. And in a Corsair, altitude, airspeed is your friend. So he had very limited places to land, going low and slow. Saw a neighborhood, and he was just coming in to land in the neighborhood, very dicey with houses and such. And so I was on his wing. I was flying an SNJ. He peeled over, and he just landed ever so gently in the tops of the trees. Little did we know the trees were that big around. So I had lost my father and the aircraft in 2002.
You know, at the risk of going out down this road, when you're so deeply entwined with your dad in every way, and you're flying on his wing and see what happened, with you after that accident when you lost your dad?
That's interesting.
What went on?
Well, that's a very interesting question because I was in the SNJ, and I would fly off my dad's wing. And I had my oldest son in my back seat, and my other son was in the B-25. And my mother was on the ground at the time. So we basically had the entire family there. And when I saw the accident, I circled, waiting for him to get out. And fire ensued. And now I could see what the situation was. I didn't see him come out. I didn't know what it was. But now I have my son in the back seat. So I need to land. Got my game face on. picked up everything I had to pick up, get back to the airport. Of course, there's a 90-degree crosswind. And landed the airplane, did what I needed to do, and then it was tough. It was very difficult.
So how do you start picking up pieces after something like that happens?
Well,
not only for the airplane, but for you.
Well, my dad, we worked together, we played together, you know, worked hard, played hard, and he was my best friend. You know, it was one of those. So it was very difficult. And about 6 years later, I decided I want to rebuild the airplane.
6 years?
6 years it took me to kind of just digest the whole situation. And, you know, not to digress too much, after the accident, I got in the SNJ and went to Tyndall Air Force Base in March of the following year. So it was my first air show after my dad had the accident. And I was sitting there eating breakfast, and there was a Delta pilot and, you know, various pilots. And we all go to the airfield, and he was racing the jet truck. And somehow there was a miscommunication. The jet truck took off, and he thought it was a taunting pass. He saw he messed up, pulled it hard, stalled it, and impacted the ground. So I just sat there, and I just walked up and down the flight line, because this is the second time in a very short period of time, and really questioned myself and what I just saw. But again, I pulled within, persevered, rationalized what happened, and keep moving forward. So it took 6 years to get over that, and had the opportunity to buy a lot of parts and facilitate the restoration.